My name's Crispin Flintoff. I'm the presenter of Not the Andrew Marr Show, which is on Zoom every Sunday morning at 10:30, and has been going since lockdown. We've got a good audience of sort of up to 500 people most weeks from all over the country who are mostly politically homeless. Socialists who have no party to be part of, or have been pushed out of the Labour Party, or have resigned from the Labour Party. Some are still in the Labour Party, but they're very unhappy. It's a community really of people who are trying to get over what's happened to socialists since 2019, really. Before I was presenting Not the Andrew Marr Show, I was a stand-up comedian, and then I was a compere of benefit nights, I suppose you could call them, for the Labour Party. I'd put on comedy nights for the Labour Party called Stand Up for Labour, and I did that from 2012 until 2019, and I think I put on over 250 events all over the country, Scotland, North Wales, South Wales, Cornwall, Kent, everywhere, small villages and big cities. Now, I think I put on more fundraisers as an individual than any other member of the Labour Party in history. I don't believe anyone else would be so silly as to do all that. It felt like the right thing to do, because I thought politics wasn't engaging enough people and that it needed to be more entertaining. So there's a mix of comedy and political speakers
Well,
at
the
each of
thing
the
is
events.
also, Crispin, I mean, you're talking really about the Corbyn era, aren't you? And mostly anyway. And this is a, I suppose, was a, when we think of Corbyn, at least I do, as a bit of a rock star. He used to be a real draw. People would come, he had several gigs in Bristol, and we call, I call him a gig because there were thousands of people turned out to come and see him speak.
Yeah, I mean that was the best time of my life, to see all those people engaged and hopeful. It was just an amazing time, and I don't think it will never be forgotten as a moment in history, those crowds. So I was part of that. I was on that wave of that, putting events on and seeing how many people were interested and blown away by this. And then the Brexit issue sort of came in, and I knew it was the wrong policy to think you could sort of sit on the fence and try and have a second referendum. And then losing that election in 2019, I thought it was kind of inevitable. But what happened then with the COVID and the lockdown, plus Jeremy Corbyn no longer being leader and Starmer coming in, has been hell for all those people that we just talked about who were going out to those events
Yeah,
with
so
such
what
hope and
happened to you
optimism.
exactly? Can you just take us through what happened to you? Because you're no longer a member of the party, are you?
No, I well, I got suspended for. I mean, just ridiculous. I mean, there's so many people who've been suspended for ridiculous reasons. I mean, mine is pretty ridiculous. I mean, it is remarkably ridiculous. I was the secretary of my local Labour Party, and the chair wanted to, well, he resigned, and the people in the executive said we need to have a letter from him to circulate to members about why he's resigned. So I asked the former chair to write a letter, and he sent it to me, and I just circulated it to all the members. In the letter, in one of the paragraphs, he wrote something about anti-Semitism being conflated with anti-Zionism. That was it. And then about 2 weeks later, I got a letter of suspension from the Labour Party for circulating material for racist material, effectively, as if it was if something I'd written that was kind of racist, which I obviously hadn't written it. I didn't even really read it. I just circulated it. So they suspended me, and then they and then I'd on my show I had a person come on who exposed someone who works for the Labour Party as having a mortgage company that they are a director of at the same time as they are a member, a paid official of the Labour Party. And they showed a company's house screenshot of their of that company with an address on it, which was the business address. The Labour Party sent me an expulsion letter for harassment of a member of staff and for putting their home address out to everyone. It wasn't I didn't have any idea that he'd put his home address as his business address on this company. And also it wasn't my feature, it was someone else's. So they expelled me for a feature that was included on Not the Andrew Marr Show. They also sent very threatening letters from lawyers saying that I'd have to pay massive damages for this. They harassed YouTube to pull it down off YouTube. It's still, I've still got some kind of like a yellow card from YouTube, even though I've appealed against it. I had to employ a lawyer to refute these to answer back these legal challenge, these legal threats from Labour, and they did that very effectively. And Labour didn't have anything to say after that. They were really, really trying to scare me. And I've had the same thing from another law firm about a feature I did on bullying in the Labour Party, and some a big law firm. I think it's the Queen's Law, the former Queen's Law firm. Wrote to me on the morning of the broadcast saying, if you put this out, we'll do this and we'll do that. But the only problem for them is I don't have any assets. I don't own a house or even a car. I don't think they could really get me for much. And I'm sort of, I've once you've been threatened a couple of times, you sort of just, it doesn't bother you as much, really. But yeah, the Labour Party's like a load of gangsters, as far as I'm concerned. The way they behave, they just get rid of whoever they like on any base for any reason. There's no justice. I mean, it's written into the Labour Party rule book that natural justice is not part of these rules. I mean, you can't get more blatantly
Well, yeah,
unjust
but
and
there's
unfair.
more. Surely, there's more to it than that, Crispin. I mean, what's happened is it's like you're kind of an abusive relationship. You've been spending your, free time and effort over many years becoming one of the great heroes, all-time heroes of the Labour Party, raising funds for them, and then they've treated you like this. I mean, you could not imagine a worse kind of relationship. Someone. So how have you coped with all this emotionally? It must have been a horrible shock at the time to, after you've, spent all this time, trying to raise funds for them, and then they treat you like this, and it effectively, like you say, like a bunch of gangsters.
Well, I mean, there's people who've had it worse than me, and that's and that's a consolation. That's sort of like is a comfort to me that I'm not alone on that. I mean, I'm looking back at Ken Livingstone, this bloke who was the mayor of London 2 terms in a row, GLC leader, cut down to this figure that I met him a couple of times. And he's just been destroyed, really. He's got no money. His sense of self-esteem has gone. It's not just him. There's loads of others. Mark Wadsworth has been treated terribly, called all sorts of things for no good reason. Jackie Walker, Tony Greenstein. I mean, these people who were smeared as anti-Semites, who are Jewish. I find that must be. And then obviously Jeremy Corbyn being smeared as a racist or an anti-Semite, and he's one of the most doggedly anti-racist people that you can imagine.
Yeah, so I mean, look, I mean, how
Yeah,
on
I mean,
earth do you manage to make comedy out of this? It sounds almost an uphill struggle.
well, I don't really make comedy of it, but I tend to, I think that, yeah, we you know, this is the thing. We have to get through this. We have to. We socialists have been pushed away, like a tribe has been pushed away. We are a tribe that's been exiled, and we have to keep our spirits up, and then we have to come back again. At the moment, we're in trauma. We've been treated terribly. We had all this hope. You know, we're talking about not that many years ago, thinking we were on the cusp of government.
Well, you
And now
were.
we
You
can't
had
even.
hundreds of thousands of people, particularly young people, joining the party. It was one of the most well-supported parties anywhere in Europe. I mean, per head of population, massive support. But yeah. So, but ha okay. So, come back. Yes, but how?
Well, I've there's so many people trying to come back, different approaches, different, you know, new parties or alliances of parties. And then you've had sort of Enough is Enough, this organization that set up last year, which everyone seemed to join in the hope it was something that we could build on, which has just disappeared. There's nothing's happening there. So people are looking for an answer. I have a particular idea which I'm hoping to put out in the next week or two that will get people engaged and get them out there. I don't think we're in a situation where we can have a political party that will stand in the general election that could do any good, and it might embarrass itself and demoralize people more. So my feeling is we actually need to stop Starmer. We need to apply ourselves to making sure this man, who is the most dishonest individual in politics, is not allowed, does not get to number 10. We need to expose his lies, his U-turns, the people who back him, people who are behind him, Peter Mandelson. I mean, he's funded by a man who made his money mostly from apartheid in South Africa. £5 million a donor has given to the Labour Party, always going to. He's already given some. He's going to give up to 5 million. The thing is, the media are not giving Starmer a bad time at all.
No,
It's
you're right. No.
almost like he's just being set up to be
Yeah, it's
put into
almost, I mean,
power.
Blair, in a similar way to the way the media loved Blair, didn't they? And he was kind of groomed almost via the media to become the person that most Labour Party people thought was going to take over, you know, from John Smith, for example. And anyway, so there are figures out there, aren't there? Obviously, you've got people like Ken Livingstone, you've got George Galloway, you've got Chris Williamson, you've got Jeremy Corbyn himself, you've got a whole load of quite key Labour figures still around, and you've got loads of activists. I'm just talking about here in Bristol, where the Labour Party has behaved abominably to people who've given their lives to the party, you know, expelled them from Bristol West Labour Party. The whole lot was just told no. We're being run from, you're now being run from central office. So, I mean, surely there is some mileage in the old party networks that there's so many people in every constituency pretty much that have been bullied in this way. And I mean, that's one thing, but I think even a more important question for you is you almost seem to be saying, well, let's get Starmer. Well, of course, that means another 5 years of Conservative government, possibly.
I think that's true. I think it. I if you know if someone says to me, "What's worse, Starmer or the Conservatives?" I'd say Starmer. The reason I'd say that is he has no differences on policy, whether it's foreign policy. I mean, foreign policy, he says he'll follow anything the US does. I mean, where does that lead? Economic policy. He talks about having no money to pay for people who have more than two children if they need benefits, and et cetera, et cetera. On austerity, he's no different to the Tories. On the NHS, they're talking about outsourcing the NHS to private companies. When you look at the utilities, there's no wish to have public ownership on any of those. If we look at the education policy, Ofsted is still triumphed by Trump, trumpeted by Labour, and tests and all that stuff that's destroying creativity of children. It goes on and on. There is no policy that Labour has that is any better than a Thatcherite policy. And as on top of that, you have a party that is the one that we all suppose is the opposition and the hope for. And if they come into power and they don't produce anything other than what the Conservatives have been doing since Thatcher, then it's going to lead to a lot of unrest and unhappiness. And I really don't think that it would be a good thing for this country to see a Starmer government, because the other aspect of this that we have to think about is he is so opposed to free speech in the Labour Party. And the way he's behaved within the Labour Party with people he doesn't agree with shows that he will not tolerate any opposition. And I believe you've seen in the votes as well on the policing bill, online bills. People are not being given freedom to express themselves online. He would be very, very authoritarian, and I believe he'd be more authoritarian than a Tory. The question of, what are you gonna you'll just get another 5 years of Tories. Well, maybe we would, but I think that would be better than a Starmer government.
I mean, there are people out there who've been Labour Party members ever since the 70s. They've seen their ups and downs, and they're hanging on for another Harold Wilson or Jeremy Corbyn. And what would you say to them?
I think that's finished. The Labour Party is so run by bureaucracy. The bureaucrats are in so much control of it that you'll never get Jeremy Corbyn come up on the ballot paper again. It's just not feasible. They are controlled by people who are coming in and out of lobbying companies as well. I mean, private lobbying is going on all around the Labour Party. They weren't. If you look at the candidates that are being selected now, there's hardly anyone who isn't sort of their managerial status people with their sort of. There's no and who were spads and stuff like that. There's no difference from the Conservatives in the class of people that are in the Labour Party.
So by spans you mean these special advisors, don't you?
Sorry, I don't normally use acronyms, but sorry,
I know
just give it a go.
they appeared. I think it was under John Major that these people appeared, and they seem to be kind of a way of controlling government from afar. I wonder. So anyway, what do you make of the because obviously COVID was a big part of your. Andrew Marr show, and not the Andrew Marr show, sorry.
All
And
right.
what do you make of that whole episode? Because now we've got the benefit of hindsight. I mean, we on our show call it the plandemic, but it certainly doesn't seem as if it was what it said it was on the tin. What do you make of it in hindsight?
I was extremely frightened of it when it started. I'd go to the shop with a hood on, earmuffs, sunglasses, gloves, and I wouldn't go anywhere near anyone. And I was scared, senseless. I was going to say something else about catching this killer illness that I'd been reading about, seeing all these videos about from China and Italy and stuff. And that was a very horrific, scary time to be in when you had all this stuff going on. But gradually, I do think, I just thought this isn't really killing that many people. You know, the average age, I've heard that one about the average age of someone dying from COVID was older than the average age of life, like average life expectancy, I think. So the fear of it kind of disappeared in a way for me. And then I was very kind of skeptical about the lockdowns and all the controlling methods, you know, that they were using, which didn't seem to make, I mean, some of them didn't seem to make sense. I mean, I don't think the masks particularly made anyone safe. I think if you wear a mask twice, it loses all power anyway. There's a lot of fear being passed around and spread around, and you still see people with masks on now, outdoors, walking down the road. And I'm sort of thinking this has damaged people in a serious way. And on the on the not the Andrew Marr show, you know, I did do discussions on COVID, and it was a very contentious issue. But there were clearly people who had been damaged psychologically by this lockdown and fear, and they were living in a horrible place because of it. But then at the same time, there's a lot of anger and fear that was generated about zero COVID. You know, this was the thing that the left was mostly talking about, was zero COVID, which was where we shouldn't go back to work at all until there's no cases out there and the infection rate is down to zero. I'm not a particular expert on what all that was, but it was this zero COVID was the dominating outlook on the left, as I see it. Although there were people on the left, I mean, I would say people like Heiko Kuh and Piers Corbyn, who, I mean, I wouldn't, they are on the left, whatever people say. And they were saying this wasn't what it was, what everyone was saying it was. And they were given lots of flack and called COVID deniers and skeptics and stuff like that. I don't think the issue, I think there's a problem with this issue because there are people on the left who are calling anyone who questions COVID a right winger, as though they can't see that you can question something like this and still be a socialist. I mean, it's quite bizarre. I mean, the guy that, as I mentioned, Heiko Kuh, who he's been on at Speaker's Corner for decades. He's got arrested dozens of times for breaking rules on lockdown and stuff. But he started off as someone who was very ser who, like me, thought this was a very serious thing. And then he started to see it wasn't that. But he's been really kind of cold-shouldered by the left, and also that, you know, the censorship on it was pretty amazing. I mean, YouTube and all the social media platforms were taking it down. Any criticism of lockdown or of the vaccine as well. It's an issue that I don't even really want to talk about on my show because I know I'll upset lots of people. But I mean, I'm telling you this is my sort of my take on it. I'm not really someone who gives my opinion on Not the Andrew Marr Show. I listen to others, but my take on it is that it was very damaging, and there's a lot of reason to be skeptical about what happened, and I don't think it's healthy for people to just shut people up who are skeptical. I that's pretty much how I see it.
Well, the other big thing that's affecting much of the world today is this cost of living crisis. What do you make of that, Crispin? It's nice to be able to give you a bit of a grilling on these things because we're hearing this week about the Bank of England putting interest rates up again. There's a lot of people out there paying rent and also obviously mortgages too that are finding that actually they're getting very close to the line that they don't have any spending money at all. So what's going on? It just seems to me that the solution the Bank of England keep coming up with is actually just simply making things worse.
Well, I've been featuring on the show pretty much every other week, Prem Sikka, the economist, the accountant, professor of accountancy, talking to him about these interest rate rises. I mean, the Bank of England's policy is absolutely ridiculous. And it's been clear it has been that way for months and months. There's no link between putting up in interest rates and inflation coming down. That our inflation is not just controlled by our interest rates. It's such a ridiculous idea. And the thing is, the problem is, neither of the two parties has got any inclination to question the Bank of England. And I don't know, I mean, probably the Lib Dems don't even as well. I mean, that it's a real problem that we're giving these people in the Bank of England all this power, and they seem to be pushing us towards a recession, but also, as you say, the situation where people can't afford to live. And they're just watching it because they've got some idea that Bank of England know best, and they clearly don't know best.
No, they don't. I mean, the other thing aspect to all of this, of course, is their mates in the city are looking at all these assets that are having to be sold off because, I mean, say for example, a shop where the high street owners of the shop can no longer rent it out because the small medium businesses have all gone bust. A pub maybe that's gone bust because people have got no spending money. This kind of thing. All this is then available for peanuts to their mates in the city to do as property development.
Exactly, yeah. Well, that's true. I mean, the two parties are ignoring the fact that there's a class issue here, that those in the Bank of England that are allied to those interests in the city, and they're making out that they're kind of detached from that, and they're kind of what would you call them, beneficial. They're thinking about the interests of the whole country. It's clear they're not. And that, the problem is we don't have an opposition. We don't have an alternative, and it's
No, it's
glaringly
terrible.
obvious. That's the problem.
I mean, yeah, maybe only people like Mick Lynch seem to be like the only opposition. Anyway, look, just to wind up, can you just tell us a bit about your roadshow? Because I know you're going around the country. We saw you here in Nailsea at the weekend. Great stuff. You've got what looks like an old horse box or something with a stage that comes down with a little roof over the top of the stage. Tell us about that and whereabouts you're heading in the future. How do people follow it and what are you up to?
Well, we had a, I wanted to put shows on during lockdown, live shows, but if you try to get a theatre, they charge the same amount of money, but you can only have half the number of people, or even a third of the number of people. It just wasn't making any sense. You couldn't do it. I thought about getting a marquee a sort of stage and putting it in a transit van and unpacking it, but the cost of that was extortionate. And then I just saw this ad for a removals truck that had been converted into a stage truck, where the stage comes off the side of the truck, and it was solar powered as well, so that all the PA was run by solar, with solar panels on the roof of the truck. And it's a 1993 Mercedes box van with no seat belts in it, so it's quite scary for me when I sit in the passenger seat. And it doesn't go faster than about 45, 50 miles an hour on the motorway. But it we managed to pay for it with a crowdfunder, and we've done dates in Brighton, Hastings, Nottingham. We did one in Islington last month for Jeremy Corbyn's 40th anniversary as MP for Islington North. That was a bit amused. That was quite exciting because I didn't know if he'd turn up until the last minute when he did, and then everyone was just really delirious that Jeremy had turned up and spoke at the end. And then we did this night in Nailsea on Sunday, and on Saturday. But on with that one, that was really about the banning of the film about Jeremy Corbyn. That this film's been banned from being shown in community centres. People keep being given letters by the campaign against anti-Semitism saying it's anti-Semitic, and it certainly isn't. And these letters threaten all sorts of things to these community centres and theatres and cinemas. So I thought, well, let's put this film on in this farm on an inflatable screen. And that's what we did. We hired an inflatable screen, and when it was dusk, we put the film on, and everyone was able to watch it in the under the stars at Nailsea, and it was a bit windy, but I thought it was a great night,
Well,
and I'm hoping to
I hope
do.
your inflatable screen didn't take off like a bouncy castle. I bet it would have been difficult to keep the projector focused on it if it had done that. But anyway, look, what's the best way for people to follow where you
Oh,
are,
if they,
what you're up to?
well, if you go to our Twitter feed, not the Andrew Marr Show, or we've got the website, not the Andrew Marr Show. And look up, look, not the Andrew Marr Show on a search engine, and you'll find it. So, yeah, thank you for this, for giving me the time to tell you this sad story.
Well, no, it's not a sad story. It's a story of a sad situation which some people actually take to their hearts and do something about, which you've done. But whereabouts are you going to be over the next couple of weeks, Crispin? You got any dates coming?
We got one in Liverpool coming up, at the same the day before the TUC conference, TUC Congress on 9th of September. That's our next one. We're definitely going to be doing a lot of these before the next general election. So, I mean, that's probably going to be next summer, I would imagine. So there'll be lots of them then.
Okay, Crispin Flintoff from Not the Andrew Marr Show. Thanks very much for joining us.
Cheers.